We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
It gets more complicated. You need the resources and the technology to be able to manage some of those cases and do a lot of the work that, quite frankly, years ago, law enforcement used to do.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Today, we're talking about organized retail crime with Tony Shepard, the Director of Loss Prevention Solutions at ThinkLP. Tony has over 27 years of experience working in loss prevention for retailers, including CVS and Ulta Beauty, and has been working on ORC for over a decade. While the retail industry has been dealing with organized retail crime for many years, the topic has gained new attention in the media. So today, we're going to talk to Tony about why we're hearing so much about it, how the pandemic has impacted the ORC problem, and how retailers can combat the issue and plan for the future. So Tony, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me, Bill.
We're so glad that you're here. And this is such an interesting, sadly interesting subject because it is getting so much attention these days. But let's start first with Tony, your career in retail and a bit about your journey.
Yeah, sure. So you already aged me, Bill. I've been in retail a long time. I actually started out as a store detective at Montgomery Ward.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Watching this podcast, who are familiar with Montgomery Ward. And just like a lot of folks in loss prevention, you know, didn't even know really what it was, didn't plan for that to be my career, but liked it and moved up the ranks, you know, to, you know, multi-store level, district level, et cetera. And then to your point, I've worked for several retail companies, again, with Wards starting out, Bloomingdale's, Family Dollar, Pep Boys, different segments of retail, really, not just so soft lines, automotive, an airport retailer called the Parity Shops. But the bulk of my career was spent at CVS Health. I was there for about 18 years. I also did a lot of different, so I worked in loss prevention. I also did part of my time in operations as well at that airport retail company. I've worked in logistics loss prevention, physical, you know, loss prevention, field loss prevention. And then, you know, to your point, spent the last, gosh, probably it all runs together, Bill, I'm going to say maybe 13 years or so, dealing specifically with organized retail crime for a large portion of CVS, for a year at Ulta Beauty, and then and now at a software company, ThinkLP, who, you know, does case management software for retail companies, along with audit and exception reporting.
So, Tony, the organized retail crime, now we all know we hear shoplifting and things of that sort. But organized retail crime, it's been an issue for a number of years. We've issued a number of reports for a number of years out of the National Retail Federation. But now it's getting a lot of national attention. Tell me and everyone else listening, what is organized crime and why is it making headlines today?
Yeah, I think from a definition standpoint, Bill, actually NRF actually helped to draft the definition many, many years ago. I remember being a part of that process. And again, it's a lengthy definition, but basically it's, you know, stealing from a retail location or committing some type of fraud from a retail location. And at the end of the day, you're converting that to cash, right? So it could be, you know, the traditional type, you're just taking the product and you're reselling it. Could be you're committing credit card fraud, doing the same thing. Could be you're taking the product and returning it to get cash. So it's, again, it's all about the money at the end of the day, but it's any theft or fraud where you're, you know, getting something in order to convert it to cash. I actually, to me, I simplify it. To me, it's just organized crime committed against a retailer, plain and simple. And there's varying levels of that, but that's really, to me, the way I kind of define it, I guess. And then as far as why it's in the media, I think there's several reasons for that. I think there's been some, you know, highlighted issues recently, right? I mean, I think a lot of people have probably seen the video of the gentleman on the bicycle, you know, with a garbage bag. And unfortunately, Bill, I will tell you that that's been going on for years. That's not a new development. I actually was in that market, you know, several years ago with a previous company and saw that type of activity going on a fairly regular basis. So I think it's the media has highlighted it now. I think that there's some pending legislation that may have raised the media's attention to the issue. So therefore, it's being broadcasted a little bit more than it has been in the past. I also think, though, that it kind of has this like ebb and flow, meaning that it gets the attention for a while, right? Because I remember years ago it was, and then there were some data breach issues, and then that kind of sucked up all the attention, right? Sure. And then so it kind of went in the background, but it never went away, right? I think that it's on the increase. I think the media has got, you know, their grips in it right now. And again, there's just so many examples of these significant incidents that quite frankly are shocking to the average person who's not has not dealt with this before.
So what makes it organized though? I mean, is it people, is it a gang or what, why is it organized if it's just retail crime?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So I would say that again, it's varying levels, right? But really, so I'll just use traditional organized retail crime again, just taking the product to resell it. If I'm taking it from a store and I'm reselling it around the corner, right? It's still theoretically based on our definition, organized retail crimes and reselling it, but that's low level organized retail crime. And I think that when it gets more complicated is when I'm taking it and then I'm cleaning it, you know, I'm reselling it. I'm selling it on an online marketplace. Putting it back into the, you know, gray market supply chain. So sometimes the boosters themselves, I wouldn't classify them as organized, quite frankly. I mean, a lot of it, I'd call it disorganized, right? But then it's where the product goes, the flow of the goods once they're removed, all of that is clearly organized. As a matter of fact, there's cases where, you know, former old school organized retail crime folks have been involved in this type of activity.
Wow. You know, when I think of organized retail crime, I think of the mafia. It's just the first thing that comes to mind. And I assume it's a little like that. I mean, they know what they're doing. They know how to get it done. They know where to go to sell the product. And that's the way they operate. And it's pretty vast.
No, it's exactly that. I actually had a case years ago, and I was with a vice president who I will not name. And we were in a warehouse location that was a fence, right? So they're dealing in stolen goods, only stolen goods. And I remember the comment he made to me was, "Tony, it's like a legitimate business, right?" Well, it is like a legitimate business. Mike. It's just we're dealing in stolen goods. Right? So I think that, yeah, again, the further up your chain you go, the more organized it gets. And by the way, those are the folks that are making more money as well.
For sure. So the NRF's recent retail security survey, organized retail crime was cited as the threat retailers have made more of a priority in 2021. And about 69% of retailers have said that they had seen an increase in ORC activity over the past year. From your perspective, what impact has the pandemic had on retail security generally? And what was the impact to the threat of organized retail crime?
Yeah, I think, again, it's obviously increased, right? And you can have a debate as to how much of that was because, you know, more people were unemployed, weren't working, et cetera. I personally don't think that's really a significant piece of the issue. I think the issue, or what increased it significantly, was the fact that more consumers were buying online. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there was more demand for product on online marketplaces, thereby more demand for stolen product as well, right? So by default, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about supply and demand, right? There's only so many, like if I have allergies, there's only so many people have allergies, there's only so many Zyrtec that's going to be sold, or so many Claritin they're going to be sold. So In my opinion, I think a lot of it is just the fact that more consumers went online. And unfortunately, that's where we see a lot of the stolen product ending up, is on various online marketplaces.
So Tony, I've seen the videos, I've seen the news reports, the people just walking into a store where they were at Ulta Beauty. And the customers were just standing there watching, amazed, as these people just started loading up their bags. How is that happening? I'm sure that it's been happening. And I'm sure that the reason that we're more aware of it is because everybody takes out their phones and basically videotapes it. But it just seems so bold. Is that the trend?
Yeah, unfortunately, Bill, it is. I mean, I think that I go back to, I started in Montgomery Ward, right?
Right.
And back then, you know, loss prevention typically made apprehensions, right? So you would apprehend shoplifters, right?
Right.
And so now in today's world, and this has been happening for a while, most retail companies, quite frankly, have hands-off policies, right? They do not make apprehensions. And there's legitimate reasons, obviously, for that, right? There's liability issues, certainly safety issues. So I think that the criminal element obviously knows that, right? So they know that they can do what they want and no one's going to interfere with them. And rightfully so, because we don't want to get anybody hurt, right?
Correct.
And so, unfortunately, there's there's reduced consequences for that as well, right? I mean, most states have raised felony limits. It's unfortunately, Bill, I almost feel like sometimes that folks look at it as like a victimless crime, right? Because it's a big company. So it's, oh, they got plenty of that.
Sure.
Or some people think their insurance covers it or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And so I think that it's just kind of, you know, it's just a retail company, right? Yeah. And again, there's obviously limited law enforcement resources now, right? There's challenges there. It's just almost the perfect storm, right? So I think that's, you know, the pandemic happened, but other things happened as well that kind of created this perfect storm, this increase. And these folks know that there's just really not a lot of consequences for it, right? Even when they're caught, there's not a lot of consequences.
I'll tell you, when I was with Walmart and had the opportunity to work in the stores and the time that I got to spend with the asset protection team, it's fascinating. It is absolutely stunningly fascinating because you don't see that. You don't think about it. You don't believe that it's really happening, and yet it's all around you. And it's just, it is an amazing problem. And so it's a problem that's been around for a long time. But what are retailers, what can they do? I mean, how do they decrease this or address it in a way that actually helps them to prevent it?
Yeah, I think retailers are doing a lot, right? I mean, I think that, you know, obviously there's the physical things, right? So they're, you know, unfortunately locking up things in some stores, right? Mm-hmm. Which is inconvenience.
It's a pain in the rear. Because everything I want, it appears, is something that a criminal wants.
And things you might not think are high theft items, right?
Correct.
So, yeah.
Exactly. It's like soap. I mean, it was unbelievable to me. Anyway.
Yeah, I know that. They're locking. They're also coming up with ways to kind of make it harder to grab it in bulk, right? But not lock it, right? So it's not an inconvenience. They're using, you know, different tags on the product, whether it's the alarm tags that'll go off at the door, or anti-resale tags, or what they're referred to. So when, you know, the criminal tries to remove the tag, it like damages the box, so then it values the product. Some companies are using GPS trackers in some of their items, right? So when they are stolen, they can track the product. RFID tags. There's, you know, resources, obviously. Most loss prevention departments now have more people dedicated towards this problem because they realize how significant it is. Like early on in my career, I remember the old pie chart we used to have that would show like how much shrink was caused by different things, right? And it was always the internal theft bucket was always kind of that biggest piece of the pie, right? And then you had, you know, external, and you had vendor and paperwork and a few other things, depending on the company. And so gradually, in my opinion, that external pie has kind of gotten bigger. And now some companies are trying to separate, you know, what's generic external theft from organized retail crime, right? And then obviously devoting resources as warranted to this significant issue. So I would say retailers are doing a lot of different things. I think that a lot of them are using technology differently, right? So whether it's ThinkLP or others, right? It's you'd have Joe Smith did X, right?
Right.
You interviewed. Now you've got to have, you know, well, there's these three fences who were selling to this fence and they're driving this car and it's so much more complex that you need different technology to be able to manage those, almost like law enforcement has been using, right?
Right.
Very similar in that sense. It gets more complicated. You need the resources and the technology to be able to manage through some of those cases and do a lot of the work that, quite frankly, years ago, law enforcement used to do, right? So now you've got retailers out there doing vehicle surveillance, doing, again, things that traditionally folks think of law enforcement doing. And a lot of times now retailers are doing themselves in order to build the case, right, to assist law enforcement and assist the prosecutors in prosecuting these cases.
Yeah, the thing that I remember that pie chart, I was always stunned by the fact the internal shrink was so great. And yet you didn't really hear a lot about that. It was more the external. Now all you hear about is the external. And I think that, you know, a lot of the resources that the retailers are putting into this are to kind of combat the external and particularly the organized retail crime that's being committed in their stores. You know, you talked about law enforcement, and I have so much respect for law enforcement, yet it seems like their hands are tied somewhat. I mean, how do we get some level of cooperation and collaboration that will help to address this issue? Is it law enforcement? Is it the local counties, the state legislatures? I mean, how do we do that?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things, Bill. I think that, you know, again, part of it is just the terminology, right? If you use the word shoplifting, immediately petty, right? Petty theft. You know, most states it's not even a felony. Who cares, et cetera. So I think we as an industry need to make sure we're classifying that as, you know, saying this is organized retail crime. It's not shoplifting, right?
Right.
We'll separate the two. But I think that, you know, law enforcement, in some cases, their hands are tied, right? I mean, I've worked with law enforcement for years and they get frustrated because a lot of times it's the prosecutor, whether it's, you know, the district attorney, you know, the AUSA, et cetera. And so a lot of times it's not law enforcement, it's the prosecutor. I think that the onus is on the retailers to continue to educate those folks. I would say from an investigative standpoint, certainly at a federal level, I think we've gotten a lot better over the years, right? I know specifically of federal prosecutors that have prosecuted cases that would be more than willing to prosecute these cases if retailers bring to their intention. But I think it's a lot of it's just that education piece with law enforcement and letting them know these folks are not, again, this is not shoplifting. These are not folks that are, you know, outstanding citizens who just decided they wanted something to eat or drink or a lipstick. That's not what we're talking about. And I think you have to define the difference to get them. This is professional thieves. These are fences making millions of dollars. This is a major problem. And by the way, typically they're involved in other criminal activity too. I mean, sure. I can't remember a warrant I've ever been on where there wasn't, you know, other things found, right? Whether it be guns or drugs or whatnot. I mean, these are not your upstanding citizens committing these crimes. Right. And so I think that the more you can communicate that as well, obviously, and the fact that it's that we're all victims. Think about the supply chain issues we're having right now, right? Then you exaggerate that by the fact that the groups are coming and taking all the press. So now it's all gone. Is it because it's a supply chain issue? Or is it because a group just went through and hit that market and took all of that particular product, you know? So yeah. I think it's, again, all about education, getting law enforcement, prosecutors, and the community on board to understand the significance and the significance of, you know, the other activity these folks are typically involved in as well.
Now, you mentioned education. I mean, another kind of education. So a lot of students listen to our program. Somebody says, this sounds fascinating to me. This is right up my alley. This is what I want to do. How do they become a professional in loss prevention?
I think there's a couple different ways, but I think it depends. I mean, you could, you know, obviously start and get a, you know, job as like a single store loss prevention manager where you're dealing with all things, right? It's not just, it's internal theft. Sometimes it's safety related issues, accidents, et cetera. You could go and work somewhere as a investigator, right? And work your way up like I did. I actually went to college after I started working. So I did it the backwards way. So I think that there's a lot of retail opportunities in the loss prevention industry. And unfortunately, because we continue to have increases in issues, even more opportunities. But I would say, you know, reach out to those folks, you know, certainly use your platform, specifically LinkedIn is from my personal standpoint, loss prevention. LinkedIn is the way to go. I know that I'm connected to probably hundreds of A&M students, right, from those lectures who connect to me after those sessions. So a lot of opportunities. And again, you know, may start as a single store or an investigator in a market and you know, see if you really do like it. Because it's not all fun all the time, Bill. There's a lot of work.
No, I know. And, you know, I'm in that room with those guys. I get to leave. They get to stay. I mean, I was in there so long that the manager of the store said, Bill, you really need to go. It's like, but I don't want to. This is so unbelievable. Anyway, we're almost out of time. And if you've ever listened to Retail Gets Real before, you probably know that we have a segment of the program that we really enjoy, and it's called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Are you ready, Tony?
I'm ready.
All right, so your favorite item that you just recently bought online?
Ooh, bought online. A bicycle.
Wow. That's a pretty major purchase online.
Very good. And I normally wouldn't do that. I even put it together myself, Bill. So hopefully.
Wow. Congratulations. How many bolts did you have left over? what is the best thing that you've read, watched, or listened to lately other than Retail Gets Real?
Well, I'm a baseball fan and my Astros are in the playoffs. So that's fresh in my mind. You said right off the bat, fresh in my mind.
Yes, so you were.
I would have to say baseball right now.
Good luck to your Astros. What do you do to unwind other than watch baseball? Because I don't unwind when I watch baseball. That's not an unwinding experience for me.
I spend time with my kids, Bill. I'm blessed with five children. My oldest just turned 18 last week, and my youngest will be three in about 3 weeks. All of my extra time is dealing with those five children and obviously my wife. So
and that's how you unwind.
Yeah.
I hear you. Well, Tony, where does somebody go to learn more about the work you're doing, ThinkLP, and in the realm of organized retail crime?
Yeah, I think, well, from my standpoint, obviously, I'm an open book. I think, everybody knows me in retail knows that. I'll connect with whomever on LinkedIn. So it's just under my name. from a ThinkLP standpoint, it's just thinklp.com. We're really easy to look up. I think that, again, NRF obviously is an opportunity. And there's other associations out there as well, certainly, that delve into this retail in general, retail loss prevention. I belong to a group called CLEAR, which is the Coalition of Law Enforcement and Retail. I'm actually on their board, which is probably more specifically geared towards this type of criminal activity, right? Others, dealing with so many other things, right? Obviously, like the supply chain issues. So just a plethora of information,
Cool. Well, Tony, thank you so very much. It's great to see you again. We'll give it a couple more weeks and maybe we'll do it again. I don't know. And we really do appreciate your insights. This is a big issue, and it's a big issue for our retailers. It's a big issue for law enforcement. It's a big issue for our communities, our states, and for people that want to feel safe in the stores where they shop. And I think that this is something that is going to continue to receive the attention it deserves. And we look forward to working with you and our retail community to address it and hopefully get in front of it. It's not easy. So thanks again, Tony.
No, thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again for listening. As we say during this time of pandemic, be safe and stay well. Thanks again.